Reading from 1 Kings, chapter 19. Elijah came to a cave and lodged there, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, "What are you doing?" He said, "I have been fearful for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thy altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left. And they seek my life to take it away." And he said, "Go forth and stand upon the mount before the Lord." And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance to the cave. And the voice gave him comfort. Advent is a season that carries with it four specific themes, gifts, sets of meanings: hope, peace, joy, and love. The question becomes, how do we understand and even experience these emotions or these gifts in a way that helps us hold on to them? Well, we get a clue from Elijah. Elijah is in big trouble. He has a word to share, a word that is harsh to heathens, and Queen Jezebel's put a price on his head, and he needs to understand that God is with him. Well, God sends an earthquake. God sends a great wind. God sends a fire. But that's not where God is. God's word of hope comes to him, in the words of the Old Testament, in a still, small voice, in a whisper. For today, I want to develop the notion that the gift of hope, which is the first Sunday in Advent's theme, comes to us maybe most poignantly as a whisper, whispering hope. If that calls to mind an old gospel hymn, and if it rolls through your head throughout the course of the week, and nothing else from these few moments stays in your memory, that's fine with me. It's a sound, a whisper, whispering hope. There are very few sounds that endure. There are very memorable sounds that evoke emotions in our lives, but few truly endure. There is nothing in the world like the sound of a round leather baseball hitting a wooden bat. The crack of it is unmistakable. Nothing else in the world sounds like that. And when you're a kid in a neighborhood and the neighborhood has one wooden bat, that sound stays with you. It's the same sound that's heard years ago in Little League, high school ball, even college, and Major League Baseball. Now, the national telecasts put little microphones in the ground near home plate so that the television audience can hear the crack of the bat. But it's not the same. It's not the same as being there. It's not the same as hitting a ball with a wooden bat. Now, unless you're playing in the major leagues, the bats are aluminum, and the sound is not the same. A ping is not the same as a crack. And the newer bats are even made of carbon fiber composite. That's the same stuff they make the space shuttle out of. It doesn't sound the same. The crack of the bat carrying with it a kind of collective gasp of hope. Where's the ball going to go? That sound is not endured. How about this one? Seen one of these? Been a while? Listen to this. Hadn't been around in a while, has it? Yeah? My grandmother worked as a switchboard operator, and I thought one of the coolest things in the world as a child was to be able to call her on the phone, pick up a phone very much like this, and I still remember the number. Hold on a second. Ah, done. She'll answer the phone in a minute. And every click of the dial a sound of hope. I'll be talking to her in a second. Phones don't have dials anymore. Phone I have in my pocket, you don't even need, it doesn't make a sound at all. You simply find the contact list person and touch the screen and there they are. I miss this sound. It evoked with it a sense of anticipation, hope that I would be talking soon to someone who loved me. I heard something, however, since last we met, that is in fact an enduring sound and is infused with hope. There's nothing else in the world that sounds like it. We were invited to have lunch with our granddaughter at her elementary school. So we went to the elementary school office and were given a little sticker that, you know, legitimated our presence in the school. And we said, "Where's the lunchroom?" And the person in the office said, "Well, it's down the hall and to the left. You'll hear it." Nothing else in the world sounds like an elementary school lunchroom full of kids, and it has not changed in 50 plus years. It sounds exactly the same as it did when we were kids, and I find that oddly hopeful. Just walking around the corner, I was teleported back 50 plus years to exactly the same sound, and I find it reassuring that the sound, the buzz that children make, a collection of not quite whispers, but still small voices that create a sound that is unlike any other in the world and has not changed and isn't changeable even by the use of a quote-unquote foreign language. The buzz of kids talking to each other in a lunchroom sounds exactly the same throughout the entire world and throughout all time. It illustrates what I think hope, in its most profound definition, is about. It's not about something that we sort of womp up from within when we avert a terrible disaster. Rather, it's something that comes to us regardless of circumstance, and maybe is even most profoundly effective when something terrible or difficult in fact happens. I was thinking back, again, 50 plus years to all those kids that I knew that were in my lunchroom. I know very little about what happened to any of them. I know specifically what happened to three of them. One is a public school teacher. One is a county judge, and the other is no longer living. The class bully was killed in a motorcycle accident 20-some years ago. Happened to see it when I was in my hometown just by coincidence, one holiday season. I have to tell you that I wasn't nearly as broken up about it as I wished I had been. The individual stories of lunchroom children are many and varied, and that has not changed as well. The kids with whom we had lunch just last week, their stories will play out in 50-some plus years. Some will be teachers, county judges. Some will gain perhaps recognition with some sort of lifetime achievement award for their expertise or skill or value in some way or another. And others may wind up in jail. Others may not survive 50 plus years. I have a class of juniors and seniors at Tech now and was asking them just a couple of weeks ago in the context of a discussion, how many of you, when you got your high school yearbook, now probably 3-4 years ago, included in that high school yearbook was a memorial page, somebody that didn't make it out of high school? You know, almost all of them. Now, on the other hand, this group of 50 students that I have in this class, about 10 of them are graduating from college this semester. So the circumstances of our lives are individual and unique. And out of them come some things that are very positive and also things that would bring us to grief. I suspect that some of the 5 to 10-year-olds with whom we had lunch may not make it out of high school. Some, one, maybe, wins the Nobel Prize. I don't know, who can say, but it doesn't matter. The transcendent sense of hope lies in the fact that in this group of 150 kids or so are virtually endless possibilities. And it is that that gets any individual through what he or she must face or experiences in the ups and downs of life. The endless possibility. Well, how do we translate the buzz of 150 kids to the energy that gets us through our days? I was thinking this week about someone I knew many years ago, someone who now has, in fact, ended his life. His life has ended. I knew him in a variety of ways. I knew him initially as a parishioner. He was a member of the first church that I served. I got to know him a little better as a friend. We played golf together many times. And in the transition of my movement from full-time ministry to the academic world, I spent a year as a counselor in an alcohol and drug treatment program. And my parishioner, my friend, my golfing buddy, for a very brief time, was my client. He was working his way through and beyond issues with addiction. And I remember one particular conversation we had one evening where he was having an especially bad day. An accomplished human being was feeling hopeless. My life has not been what I wanted it to be. I'm not sure where it's going from here. Sort of on the tail end of a pretty significant midlife crisis. So I just asked him, I said, well, what's been, you know, if you were to pick one thing that you wanted to do and never got done, what would it be? And he said, I always wanted to play on the PGA Tour. Well, that's shooting for the stars. But who doesn't? You know, every kid that plays Little League Baseball wants to play in the major leagues. I know I did. Well, senior softball has to suffice. But we started talking about that. Let's parse it out a little bit. I asked him what his handicap was. He said, I play to about a 5. Very good golfer. Well, it just so happens that in the world of American sports, that anyone who plays golf and can work their handicap down to 2 is eligible to try and get into the qualifying rounds for the U.S. Open. It's truly an open event. Anybody who can work their handicap down to a 2 can try to qualify. So we talked about that. I said, well, you know, you're playing to a 5. Do you think if you worked at it hard enough, you could get your handicap down to 2? He said, well, yeah, I'd have to devote a lot to it and would probably choose not to. I said, yeah, but you could. And it was the very idea that this wildly outrageous fantasy that he had as a young person could possibly, through the working of a handicap down 3 strokes and the unbelievable luck it would take to qualify, it could happen. Didn't have to happen. And of course it didn't. But the idea that it might, this endless possibility, turned his life around and was the turning point in his treatment for alcoholism. A still small voice. Any of those still small voices grows into a sound of hope. The 5-year-old with whom we ate lunch last week at the end of that day came up to us that evening and hugged us both and simply said, good night, Graham. Good night, Papa. A still small voice that I will carry with me forever. I'll be able to call that back. And all of us can call it back and maybe even get a chance to hear it again, whether it be in the voice of a child saying something like that, the purring of a cat, the sound of an infant, sound asleep, and in their snuffly sort of way, whispering, peace. I suspect everyone in this room will, at some point, have the chance to hold an infant again or hear a child say something in a small voice again. The possibility of that occurring, I think, brings us a whispering hope. It's no accident that when Jesus was having a particularly bad day, he said to his disciples, let the children come to me. I want to hear him whisper. It's no accident that when God decided to enter the world, he entered the world as an infant, so that even Jesus' mother, who would experience enormous joy and heartbreak, as does every mother, have the chance to hold him when he's helpless and hear him whisper, even asleep. The endless possibilities that come with a lunchroom full of kids, the parsing out of an unfulfilled goal leading to one newly framed, or simply the sound of a small child, gives us again anytime we recall it or experience it, hope. A still small voice whispering hope. Amen.